The Lessons Learned for Vets podcast is proud to be brought to you by AFMA, the American Armed Forces Mutual Aid Association. Established in 1879, they are the longest standing nonprofit association empowering military families with affordable financial solutions for generations, offering life insurance, wealth management, mortgages, survivor assistance, and other benefits. AFMA is here to support you through every stage of life. AFMA is dedicated to helping service members be financially and logistically ready for life after the military. To support you in this process, AFMA would like to offer you their free downloadable transition timeline, a step-by-step guide to help you create a comprehensive military transition plan. Let AFMA help you get ready for your next step by visiting AFMA.com/LL4V, that's AAFMAA.com/LL4V, or clicking the link in the show notes. Welcome to the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast, your military transition debrief from the veteran mentors who've gone before you. My name is Lori Norris, and I've been teaching veterans how to successfully navigate their military transition since 2005. I'm a civilian who speaks the language of all branches of the U.S. military, and I'm on a mission to educate veterans in the job search marketing process. This podcast shares the military transition hot washes and after-action reports of your fellow veterans to smooth your own path out of the military. Well, welcome to the show. On today's episode of the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast, I'm welcoming Todd Nelson. Much like me, Todd is not a veteran, but he has dedicated his career to educating veterans for their post-military success. As a financial advisor for Edward Jones, he has made it his mission to educate veterans to navigate the unique financial challenges that accompany them into the pursuit of their next career. Todd is also the host of the Transition 30 events, bi-monthly Zoom calls that are dedicated to connecting transitioning service members to resources and organizations that support the military transition process. So I'm excited to welcome my friend Todd. So thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, Lori. It is such a pleasure and a privilege to be here. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you about it's an extremely important and foundational subject.
Absolutely. So it's only fair because I've been on a couple of your Transition 30 events. So it's about time I invited you, right? I know that's what you're thinking. So no.
Hopefully you're going to be kinder to me than I am to you.
I tell everybody that's listening, when I'm on his Transition 30 events, he holds a clock to the camera and expects me to finish right away. And I don't follow rules very well. As he's learned, he always makes me go last because I'm the longest. Me and Dave Shantz, we fight for the longest time frame. So
yeah. There's a method to the madness. So
right, I get it. I see how it is. Well, let's just start out by talking about, like, how did you get into supporting veterans through their financial planning process? Like, how did this come about for you?
Yeah. Great question, because as you mentioned, I'm not a veteran. But the pandemic did a lot of strange things, and some of it turned out to be something that was helpful. And so as I was trying to meet people, I started realizing that veterans, as they're transitioning from active duty to post-transition, post-military career, sometimes they need to talk to me. Sometimes they may need to talk to me a year down the road. But what they really need is they do need a lot of input, a lot of support, a lot of different SMEs, experts helping them in different areas. And I immediately thought, well, you know what? Let's bring a bunch of these experts together on a call. It's what we now call the Transition 30 call. Now, I don't have 150 plus episodes that you do, but we do it every 2 or 3 months now. And we just bring these folks in. So we bring in like Dave Shantz on SkillBridge, you, when it comes to speaking military and decoding that into civilian speak, and a lot of different other organizations. And we try to vet those organizations and bring you the best of the best on those organizations and give you that information that you can use. And then you know who to connect with when you need some help in a certain area.
Good. So we're going to focus today on all the financial decisions that need to be made, especially for those who are retiring from the military. I know there's a lot of decisions that need to be made I had a friend that was going through this recently, and there were just so much, there's so much information for him to sift through. And as a, he was retiring as a colonel, and it was a really difficult process for him.
Yeah.
And so I want to start with, you talk about the three budget considerations that all veterans must take into account when they're planning for kind of post-military life. So take me through those.
Yeah. You know, I mean, when you go through TAP, they're going to talk about your emergency fund, and all of that is great information, and I don't downplay it at all. But one of the things that I focus in on is that if you can nail the financial foundation piece of your transition, it helps you in so many other areas. For instance, we were just on, you and I were on a call, but on a call yesterday, one of the gentlemen was talking about that he took a job at a big warehouse place, which we would all know. But he had bad back and bad knees from his years in the service. And that 18 to 20 miles a day that he was walking in warehouse was a complete non-starter after about 3 months. He took the job for the paycheck. And if we don't nail the financial foundation piece of your transition, it affects so many other parts. So for me, one of the first of the three things, how much is necessary? Obviously, you need to have a budget. That's basic. But as you mentioned, like you get to an 06 or, you know, and you're retiring out as a colonel, or you got 20 plus or whatever the case may be, you start to get very, very complex very, very quickly, because a lot of that, you have tax-favored status, like on your BAS, your BAH. You're taking that away. You're adding BA payments, which are tax-free. And so the thing that you have to nail down is, how much do I need to replace? And a good friend of mine, Eric Horton, has a spreadsheet that he's put together called Bridging the Gap, and realizing that once you add in VA and take out BAS and your regional location and all that, it's a very important consideration. If you can know that, okay, I only need to replace $40,000 of my income, well, that changes what kind of job you have to get. Yeah. The second thing is, how much money do you want? How much do you need? That then, of course, I just got off the call with an 06 that's retiring, and they want to have a mountain home after they retire. Well, that means, okay, we're going to have to plan some of those things. And then the last thing is, how are you going to get from what you need to what you want? And that's where having mentors in place, talking to subject matter experts in taxation and some of those things can really become a valuable piece of establishing your financial foundation.
Okay. You know, I think that one of the biggest considerations as we get older is life insurance, right? Nobody wants to talk about it. It's not a comfortable subject, like, you know, talking about estate planning and life insurance, like thinking about when you're gone, but it's important to take care of your family, right? So what would you say if a transitioning service member needs to know to make a good decision about like SGLI and VGLI?
Yeah. You know what? I think a lot of folks think that that's just information that has been repeated and repeated, but it has to be repeated, because when you're transitioning, for instance, one of my clients, he had SGLI, he transitioned into a civilian sector job, but with DOD, and he was thinking that his SGLI had carried over, when in fact it hadn't. And so now he's post-transition, and now we're trying to apply for some private life insurance because now VGLI has went away, and it because of his VA evals and some of that, it's a question of, is he going to get approved? And so the first consideration in the SGLI to VGLI consideration is, make sure that you know exactly what you think you need when it comes to insurance. And we won't talk about kind of how you figure all that out today and, you know, what type of life insurance and all that. But the point is that you want to have that conversation with your spouse, significant other, family members now, before you start your VA process, because once you start to get go through the VA process, you want to document everything. But as you're documenting everything, then the very life insurance underwriters that are trying to determine your availability for that policy may exclude you from coverage because now you've documented all of the things that have happened to you during your service.
Right.
So that becomes the first priority. Second priority then is realizing that BGLI is there for a reason. Sometimes private life insurance companies won't cover you because of your service-related injuries. And so BGLI is a great program for what it was intended to be. But when you start to look at things, you want to realize that, like, for instance, I talked to a client, and he had just gotten medically boarded after 13 years. Well, within 3 months, all of a sudden, he's having to make the decision on the SGLI and the BGLI. And the problem is you have a short period of window and you know, all of that. So now is the time to start looking at that consideration. And for instance, if you go on va.gov, BGLI now, you can get up to $500,000. They just changed that at $500,000 in coverage, but it's okay for a 5-year period. And then when you move up to the next 5-year period, then the rates change. So for instance, if you're 30 to 34, you can get a $500,000 policy for $45 a month. That's all on the va.gov website. But when you go to 50 to 54, now you're at $165 a month for that same $500,000. And if you go 60 to 64, it's $495 a month.
That's a big difference.
It's a huge difference, and it really makes sense to make that a part of your financial objective to figure out what do you want to do with life insurance and when do you need to start looking at that so that you can have the best possible options.
I know there are so many things to think about in the transition, you know, in the med board, in the retirement process even, but I think that just like we talk about the preparation process for the transition, it sounds like life insurance is one of those things that needs to be taken care of sooner rather than later, because that
Absolutely.
Rate is, you know,
yeah.
if you start it at a younger age, your rates are going to be, you know, obviously not everybody resets their rates every 5 years, like the one you talked
right.
about. So
yeah.
the sooner you get that, the better your rates are going to be, the better protected you and your family are going to be as well.
Absolutely.
So don't
Absolutely.
Put that off. Absolutely.
No.
Okay. Let's talk about the survivor benefit plan, because that's another one where it's a very complex process. So what are some of the factors in your mind that we need to think about when making the decisions all around that survivor benefit plan?
You know, and Lori, this should not be a controversial subject, but wait, the more you're on like LinkedIn or Facebook or whatever, and SPP has become one of those hot button subjects, and I'm not sure why. It really needs to boil down to, it's a very personal decision. It's based off some factors that I'll talk about here in a second that you really want to consider. But some people, if you talk to, you know, your CEO, they might say, oh, SPP is the best thing since sliced bread. You know, in the South, we use a lot of those those phrases. But if you talk to your battle buddy that just transitioned right in front of you, they might be like, talk about SPP is the worst thing possible and all, and we've run the numbers. And everybody talks about running the numbers. Well, here's the thing. I do want to delve a little bit deeper into the SPP discussion. But at the end of the day, it's all about what is right for you and what is right for your family. I have a client that he knew the SPP was not a good decision, but because his wife felt a great deal of anxiety in not having it, because they were 26-year Army veterans and family goes through a lot. And so he said, you know what, I owe it to my wife to be able to supply that and to offer that. And so that was the end of the discussion. It wasn't, is it the best thing? Is it the worst thing? It was right for their family. So if you go to militarypay.defense.gov and we start looking at, let's say you're a 38-year-old You've got 20 years and 10 months and you're an E9 in the Army. And so you're going to have about 46,000 plus or minus in pension. And that means that SBP, you're going to get 6.5% of that taken out, which is just under $3,000 a year. Mm-hmm. The thing on SBP, remember, though, is that you have to pay 30 years, typically. But then after that 30 years, you're done. But even at $3,000 for 30 years, that's $90,000. So when you go into your out-processing appointment and they ask, do you want to opt out? Because you're automatically opted in to SBP. If you want to opt out of SBP, realize that's a $90,000 decision typically, or, you know, several thousand dollars depending on your rank and all of that. And so the issue though is that as your salary increases with cost of living or your pension increases, so too does your SBP. And so it doesn't stay stationary. So some of the things that people like about SBP is that you do have that guaranteed coverage. You know that your significant other, your spouse, is going to be able to be taken care of. Now, it does reduce it by, you get 55% of your pension, so it's not a complete replacement for your pension. Right. And part of the issue, it really becomes, well, you paid in 29 years and your spouse dies. You're not going to get anything from that SBP if you do some of that. So lots of considerations and, you know, the factors that you need to weigh in. What's your medical history? What's your spouse's medical history? What is the family history? Is there longevity in the family? All of those are really key factors. And that's why don't just take, your battle buddies advice on it, because it may not be right for you.
And I think, you know, that's really the case with every part of the transition, right? It's a very personal process.
Right.
And you've got to look at it for your own situation. But I think there's nothing wrong with getting some professional advice and input into that process as well.
Right.
What would be, if someone opted out of SBP, what would be an alternative to that? Would it be life insurance?
Sure. Sure.
Okay.
Typically, that's what you would look at, is you would look at some kind of a life insurance product. So again, but if you're looking at term life insurance versus whole life insurance and permanent, all of those things, that's beyond not only the scope of this conversation, but if we go too much more, then it looks like I'm giving advice and, all that fun stuff. But okay. Life insurance would be something that would be something that most people would look at as an alternative.
Okay, that's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure. So let's shift the focus a little bit and talk taxes, because I've heard some stories of that first year of taxes. You get your pension and you're getting your new salary and you're getting your disability, and then some of that's not taxable, but some of it is. And then your spouse has a great job. And all of a sudden, you find yourself with a five-figure tax bill. Let me tell you, I've had one of those once, and that is some painful news from the tax man, right? So, what advice can you give to just make sure that people aren't in financial trouble when they file that first, like, post-service tax return?
And it can go beyond that first tax return, but what's typical is, and I'm going to use a real life example from somebody I just talked with yesterday. They're retiring out of North Carolina, out of the military after 22 years. So they have a great income from the military. And if you walk into that out processing series of appointments, and you're not prepared because you haven't taken the time to think about these things. I've heard it said, well, oh, what do I want to be withheld out of my pension? Well, typical standard is 10%. Okay, well, I'll do 10%. And with the case of this client of mine from yesterday, So he and his wife, as you mentioned, they're making really good money in the military between her and him. But you have to realize that BAS, BAH, that's a huge benefit and it's not taxed. So you want to take that into account. Now you're going to get VA, some kind of a VA payment, and that's not taxable. So that might kind of balance each other out. But what was happening is that my service member already has a job offer on the table, and essentially their income is going to double. And so instead of being at the 22% tax bracket, which is where they were, I looked at some of the tax brackets. I'm not that smart. I did have to refresh it. But now they're easily, once they get to that top threshold of their income, they're going to be at 32%. So if you check 10% on your withholding and on your pension, you're getting 100, I think he's looking at 120,000 or something like that on his pension. So very successful couple getting ready to make some very significant money. For most of us, that's very significant money. And if you do that easily just on his pension, he could be looking at a $15,000 tax bill that he's short next year. And if he misfigures what his income is from his second career, easily he could be $25,000 to $30,000. So we spent not a significant amount, but we did spend enough time to make sure that he knows that he needs to figure that out before he goes in and make sure he gets that right.
Yeah. And some people will say, well, I don't want to give that my money away to the IRS. So then you need to plan accordingly, right? Because they're going to come for their money eventually. So know what your obligations are going to be, know what your tax bracket, your percentage is going to be, and just start putting that money aside. And maybe you want to get the interest on it as opposed to giving it to the IRS. I personally like to break even. That makes me happy when I'm like, I don't owe them anything and they don't owe me anything. That makes me really happy. But just start setting that money aside so you're ready for it. So it's not
absolutely a
financial shocker, right?
Yeah,
because they don't play.
So. No, they don't. They don't. I will tell you, I was on with another at Lucas Colley, who I think you're familiar with. Yeah. And he said his first experience with the tax man was he said the tax man said, well, here's your taxes. And he says, oh, great. I really need that money. That'll really come in handy. He goes, no, that's what you owe. And he said, I about had a heart attack right there in the chair. And it was exactly for that reason. He just hadn't planned accordingly. So.
Yeah, that is a painful. I've had those moments where I'm like, I'm getting this back.
We all know.
No, that's what you owe, Lori. I'm like, oh, I'm going to need a loan.
Yeah, so. That's it.
So we talked about taxes. Let's talk about disability benefits. So, what are some of the, I know, we talk a lot about file for that disability, do the process, it's not a I deserve or don't deserve it. It's something that you should, really focus 100%. On. So what are some of the financial benefits of a VA disability rating? Obviously we get that, the money, the cash, the check that you get to cash every month. But what are some of the other benefits of having that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the simple fact of the matter is that VA payment is completely tax-free. So that's a huge benefit just in and of itself. And it's something that so many people, they discount. And I've heard it. I've heard people say, well, you know what? I didn't want to take it from my buddy because he needs it a lot more than I do. And that's simply a misunderstanding. That money is yours. You have earned it. And the benefit, and it literally becomes a lifetime annuity, if you want to look at it that way, where you are guaranteed that income. You get a cost of living adjustment every year, and it's all tax-free. You've earned it. You've earned every last bit of it. And so the silver lining at the other side of the injuries and all these things that you've sustained, the silver lining is at least you need to get what you have earned. And, you know, one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is just getting a 10% VA rating, just 10%. That qualifies you on any VA home loan or VA loan that you get, that VA funding fee is waived. And easily that can be several thousand dollars, especially on a home purchase. Even if it's the minimum of 1.4%, that's several thousand dollars that you save just by having a 10% VA rating. So do not just let that pass by. And the other thing, Lori, that I will say on that, the BDD process is fabulous as long as you get with your BSO and some of that. But like the client I referenced yesterday, that 180-day window opened up, and he was only 5 days into that window when he started doing that. So if you can plan it, the whole part about the BDD process is it speeds up that VA payment once you do finally transition. So it's a great program, and you just need to take advantage of it.
And, you know, just from the employment side of things, having that disability percentage gives you additional consideration if you want to go to work for the federal government. So Anyone with 30% or higher disability rating automatically gets that CPS status, again, depending on the time frame that you served. And it puts you at the top of the list of the highest qualified candidates. And So that disability rating also gives you the benefit of employment down the road, especially with the federal government. So typically, and I won't say always, but typically people make decisions. I was just talking with a 22-year-old young man the other day. He first job out of college. He said, "Lori, I had 3 offers in hand, and I went with the highest salary. And that highest salary required that I move across the country." And he said, "And I should have taken the job that didn't pay as much, because I know I would have been happier and I wouldn't have had to move." And so we all do it, right? We all kind of chase that salary, that highest number. And I know that, you know, Keith Cassant, who is somebody else that you're very involved with on your Transition 30, talks about, you know, like looking at prioritizing is what's most important to you: money, location, what you're doing, the people you're working with. But oftentimes that salary number lures us down a path.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So, you know, how much am I going to get paid? Like, what, you know, but really, like, salary is really just one piece of that compensation pie. There are so many other ways to negotiate within that salary process. So talk to me a little bit about kind of that total compensation package and your thoughts on that.
Man, Lori, I tell you what, the more I'm involved in this arena, the more I realize this is something that is vastly under-communicated and needs to be talked about. For instance, my client that we had talked about that he thought the SGLI was going to transfer over and it didn't. Well, he also told me that this past year that he had made a move back to South Carolina, and he was he thought that the PCS was going to be completely covered because in the military, all of your moves completely covered. The thing that has changed is in 2017, if you're non-military, that those moving expenses cannot be covered, or if they are, they count as income to you. And he said, "Todd," he said, "I didn't realize," and I had written that off, and my tax guy came back and said, "No, you can't write that off. And so now you owe the government several thousand dollars back," and, you know, it turned into this huge thing. If you don't understand the overall total compensation package, it can really mess you up. So we've already touched on BAS, BAH. That goes away. And when you start to look at all that covers, That's a huge part of your total compensation. If you're looking at a move across the country, don't assume, and they may say, you know what, we're going to give you $10,000 for the move. Well, that's great. That's all free money. It is in the military. It's not in the private sector, and you will get taxed on that. And so another thing, for instance, the TSP is different than in the private sector. Typically, you're going to hear what's referred to as a 401k. That's the most common for especially for corporations. TSP and 401k are not that much different, except one thing you need to realize is that not every company has to. If you're a company, you don't have to, at least currently, you don't have to offer a 401k plan. It's not illegal if you don't offer that. And when you do offer that, you really need to understand what does it mean when they say, we're going to give you a match. Like, for instance, one of my clients, she's 22 years old, and she just stepped into a great job in the construction industry. And they said, well, we're going to up to 6%, we'll match what you give, but we'll match it with 3% of our company stock. Totally different compensation structure.
Yeah.
And so now you start talking about what something is called vesting. And so for the first 3 years, I think it was, all of that company stock, if she leaves within the first 3 years, she loses all of that company stock. That's not them stealing it. It's just part of what's known as vesting. So when you understand what it looks like for a 401k, and understanding that a 401k can be a great way to help manage your tax situation. If you want to put in taxes before or contribute to a 401k before you pay taxes, well, that helps this year. But eventually, you're going to end up paying taxes on that. And when you look at, if you Google like 1998 tax rates, Lori, and Google rates now, you'll be shocked. You'll be like, oh my gosh. And so right now we're at a really low historic tax rate. It doesn't feel that way. I get it. It certainly doesn't feel that way to me. But the point is that when you look at it, you want to look at, okay, do I want to do a Roth contribution? Do I want to do a part traditional, part Roth contribution? You know, all of those things are a part of it. And then we talk about like stock options, restricted stock units, you know, especially if you're like saying 06 and you're transitioning, they're probably going to have some of these fringe benefits and extra salary negotiations that go into it. And so if you don't understand what incentivized stock options are or restricted stock units and the vesting schedule that comes with that, you can literally take what you think is like your example, this huge paying job. But then when you dig into the details, you realize, after 6 months, I can't do this anymore. You leave, and what you thought was a high paying job, they claw a lot of that back, and it's all perfectly legal. It's just you have to understand that total compensation package for sure.
And there is so much involved when you have that the stock sharing. I know someone who works for a tech company that is kind of going through some things right now in terms of their health of their organization. And they've said, you can't sell any of our stock.
Right.
And so, you know, that makes a difference when you can't, they basically have restricted them from utilizing the stock options.
Absolutely.
And also remember bonuses get taxed at a higher rate, right? So a bonus, you're going to get taxed at almost 50%. So my daughter's excited. She has her first job starting, and she's got a bonus, and I'm just like, okay, listen, that's not the amount of money that's going to go into your account, so you can't plan on that, right? So I think she's going to be in for an interesting surprise our first year. So just lots of different things to think about. I think the best you can do is to get some assistance, get some advice, do your research. And I know you have so many things to manage in that last, you know, few years in the service. And it's really one of the reasons we say to start so early is, you know, because we really want you to to start thinking about and conducting research and really getting and making informed decisions. So
yeah, absolutely.
So I mentioned it in the intro when I introduced you, but I want to talk really quick about your bi-monthly Transition 30 events. So tell us a little bit about those events and like how listeners can find them and tune in.
Yeah. Yeah. Transition 30 has turned into, I'm a minister in a former career, and it really is one of those things that it's simply a pay it forward type of exercise where folks like you have been gracious enough to hop on. And we have typically 6 to 10 different subject matter experts. And we try to break it down and vary it from financial readiness to VA loans to constructing your resume to where it makes sense, where you focus, right, Lori? Where you focus your resume.
There's that word.
To skill bridge, to American corporate partners, to USO, to Ford. I mean, there are so many different organizations out there. And our whole idea is, hey, you know what? You're busy. I get it. Sometimes your command chain is not allowing you the freedom or the time, or you feel like they're not. And so the Transition 30 is meant to be essentially a shotgun blast of 30 to 45 minutes. You get 5 to 6 to 8 experts in front of you, and they have 5 minutes to say, hey, I'm not going to tell you everything there is to know about SkillBridge or building your resume. But if you do need help, if this is the area you need help, I'm the person that is willing to and open to connect up with you on LinkedIn, offline, whatever the case may be. And I quite often have, 15 to 30 minute sessions with folks. And we just talk through, okay, so what does the SPP look like for you? What is, SGLI? What does it look like in your specific situation? And that's what all of the folks on the call are there to do. And it's really turned into a great, we've been in front of hundreds of different transitioning service members across all branches, whether it's 4 and out or, 20 plus.
Yeah.
They all come away with a lot of great information. So
you have a Transition 30 LinkedIn group, correct? That people can join?
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
And I'll make sure that you've got the URL on that. We've got a YouTube channel where we've archived. We've got something new that we're doing. Lori, you obviously know about this. It's called Transition 30 Extra. And so you were one of the first ones that we felt like we wanted to interview for that, because we take a 15 to 20 minute deeper dive into, okay, Lori, what does it look like? You give some great hints and some of that, but sometimes you really want to, on those subjects, you really do want to have an opportunity to dig a little bit deeper. And so it's on demand. If you're, at 3 a.m. and you need to pull that up, it's all there. So we got a YouTube channel that again, I'll send you the link so you can post that. Okay. And it's a lot of great information out there.
Excellent. And I kind of like to think that I'm the inspiration for the Transition 30 Extra, because I can never keep myself to within 5 minutes. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just giving myself too much credit. So
you're not giving yourself too much credit. You were one of the main inspirations. I'm like, you know what? You and Dave Shantz. I'm like, yes. I feel bad for both of you as you struggle in vain to get there, and then you just can't.
Well, listen, Dave and I are doing a 2-part episode. I don't know when it's going to come out in relation to this one, but yeah. So there will be. I had to go an extra 2 episodes with Dave, so we will. But
I'm
I think
sure.
It's valuable information. We're just out there trying to share everything we know. So
yep, absolutely.
Well, I appreciate you sharing all the things you know on this subject, and thank you for what you're doing, whether it's just in your education and the Transition 30 and your YouTube channel. So we will have Todd's LinkedIn in the show notes and all of the links to his YouTube channel and the Transition 30 LinkedIn group as well. So you can find all of that in the show notes. And I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that information with us today.
Lori, I love it. It's my privilege.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast.
If you learned just one lesson today that you believe can help you in your military transition, then I've done my job. Please don't keep this podcast a secret. Share it with as many of your active duty service member friends and transitioning veterans who may be struggling with that process as possible. Please subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review, and join our YouTube channel so you don't miss any lessons that we share.